Welcome into the Wednesday edition of Darkness Radio. I'm Tim Dennis. That means we have a co-host today, and that means it's the one, the only, the man with the laughs, the man who's jovial, the man who's a big cuddly bear. C-B-C-B, Beer City Bruiser. How you doing?
Hello, Tim. That was a heck of an announcement or an introduction. I love it. You should ring announce sometime, maybe, huh?
I'd like to get back into it someday, maybe. It's been a while. I'm no Bobby Cruz. What's his name over in that other organization?
Justin Roberts.
Yeah, Justin Roberts. My mom took a picture with him once. Yeah,
the Chicago guy.
Is he a Chicago guy?
Yep.
Huh.
Yep.
Yeah,
from Chicago.
I'm not sitting in a corner in a suit working on my enunciation. So it's not my gig, but I had some fun with it. I had a good time for about 7-8 years, and
And that's how we met. That's how fans don't know that. That's how you and I met. Yeah. We met through the underwater needlepoint, and both had paranormal interests, and a friendship was born.
That's it. That's exactly right. Big show today, Bruiser. We've got some interesting stories here. We're going to talk about aliens. We're going to talk about ghosts. We're going to talk about whether every cryptid in the world has been identified yet. I think I pulled that story. I hope I did. We're also going to talk about the Australian version of the Skinwalker Ranch.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Very interesting that, because Skinwalker Ranch is a fantastic location.
We're also...
An Australian one. That'll be amazing.
Yeah, we got the Australian one. We're also going to, unfortunately, read the obituary of a very famous woman who had a very famous, hobby.
Okay.
It'll be one of the last stories of the day. In fact, there was a song written about her once.
Really?
A song that when I was a young lad, my parents would refuse to let me listen to.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I can't wait to hear who this is.
Yeah. A band from my playlist. A band on everybody's playlist, I think. Anybody who was born in the 70s, I think, probably had one of their songs on their playlist.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, this song on this album that I owned was a band from the Dennis household.
I can't wait to hear what that is.
But she, unfortunately.
I want to hear what song made Mama and Papa Dennis be like, Little Timmy, not for your ears.
The first time they heard it, they went, what? The second time they listened to the words, they went, oh, no. The needle does not drop, because I had it on vinyl. The needle does not drop on that song.
I was that generation that went from vinyl to cassette tape, and there was many a times where my mom ran across the room and would pull the needle off the vinyl. And one time I tricked her where I had the vinyl spinning, but I was playing a cassette tape. So she ran over to pull off the needle, pulls it off, but the song's still playing because I had it on cassette. So she pulls it out and started pulling the tape out. And I'm like, what are you doing? You're not listening to this crap. And that's when I found out you take a pencil, you put it in the thing, and you can wind it back up.
That's right. You can wind it right back up, and you're back to listening. That's the great thing about cassettes. You know, I was cleaning out my storage last week, and I actually found a ton of old cassettes.
Really?
Yeah.
I actually, because I'm moving, we've been cleaning stuff out, and I found that we have one of those old, do you remember the tower stereos?
Yes.
It was a dual cassette tower stereo, just no speakers. It was just the console. Because remember, you had to buy the console and then the speakers separate. That's how they got you.
Yep.
And we actually found it and put it at the curb, and it was gone this morning. So.
Really?
Yeah.
Did it make you kind of sad when it disappeared?
It did, because it was a generation going away. Because I remember my kids didn't know what it was back in the day. Yeah. It was my wife's father's, they didn't know what it was. So we had a fun time that day explaining how it went from, you know, vinyl to 8-track to cassette to CD to burning your CDs to now you can have it on your iPod or your phone.
I found my.
Blown away. Like the best was, well, how do you skip the song? Well, you hit fast forward.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you gotta manually move it through. I found my old boombox that had a cassette player and a CD player on it, and I think it still works. And I found a few old cassettes of their air checks, so I'm afraid to go back and listen to them. A few ball games I called. I have a few air checks from in studio. I have the very last program that I engineered for Lake Hammond of the Jazz Image over at Minnesota Public Radio. I just found a bunch of treasures. So I brought them home to kind of go through while I'm sitting here in studio and working. So
yeah, we found a lot of old underwater needlepoint stuff and old promo DVDs and old promo VHS tapes.
Yes, I have a ton of those as well, I found. Yeah.
Yep. The VHS with my promo picture with the resume on the back, and it was fun kind of reminiscing as because moving, you gotta pack everything up, and it's just, you gotta go through it. Do we keep this or not? And we found a box, and the only letter it had on the box was W. We're both like, what is W? We open it up, it was all my old wrestling stuff, so W must have been for wrestling.
Oh.
And it's old pictures of me and guys I haven't talked in years, and old matches I have. They're all on VHS tape, and we don't have a VCR. So we're going to hang on to them, see if we can find a VCR and plug them in. And
see, I pulled out a VCR DVD burner out of my...
Ooh.
Yeah, but I don't know if it works. I have to test it yet to see if it works. If it does, I may have a way to transfer VHS to DVD if the system still works. I seem to remember there was an issue with it. But those are hard to find. It's either like you can still get one for $100 somewhere that may have a kind of a hinky issue, or they're like $800 to $1,000 now.
Yeah, or you have to take them someplace and pay exuberant amounts of money to get them burned. When my parents owned their video store, when DVDs first came around, they bought one of those converters and they would charge to transfer.
Yeah.
They could transfer your old 8mm to VHS.
Yeah.
And then your VHS to DVD, or your 8mm to DVD.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's almost 30 years ago they had that. I don't even know what happened to that thing.
I don't know either. I don't know of very many places that do it now.
Yeah, and if there's an issue with it, I don't know where to take it to get it fixed.
Right, yeah.
It's not like a software thing, you know what I mean? Because nowadays everything's computer, you just update the software.
Right. I think there are some small electronic stores that still do I know there's one locally here that does the transfer stuff still.
Okay.
But it's pretty expensive. It is spendy. Yeah, they do charge.
It takes time, too.
Like, yes.
It takes a while to get that, especially if the VHS tapes aren't as clean as they were,
right,
you know, however many years ago.
And you have to worry, because if you had stuff in storage that was a little damp, it does ruin the VHS tapes.
It does. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure we have some fans out there like, what are these two old men talking about?
Well, the reason I say this,
we didn't have streaming service back in the day. We had video stores.
Right. And the reason I say this, and I'll bring it full circle, is there's some old school investigators out there that were using VHS cameras.
Yeah.
Or were using the little mini tapes inside camcorders. And it's hard. And you used to be able to get the adapter that you could put the mini tape in, and then put it into a VHS.
Well, if you watch a lot of those older, like right now they're going through a lot of the old investigators, and they used to have, remember those long, you know the term I'm thinking of, but the long microphones that you'd hold out, and they'd have the actual
a boom mic,
and they'd have the tape, you know, the Warrens.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of their stuff coming out, and you see Ed walking around with that, with the headphones on and all that.
Yep.
And it's just, it's amazing how they could investigate. I mean, it's amazing to see how far we've come along in investigation, you know, thermal cameras and literally MP3 digital recorders that you can listen back right then and there.
Well, Ed did a lot of his sound recordings on reel to reel. And
that's what I meant. Yeah, he had the tapes, the reel-to-reel tapes.
Yeah, so with reel-to-reel tapes, here's the kicker with that. So I had to convert a lot of reel-to-reel over to digital when I was over at Minnesota Public Radio. You just don't slap a reel-to-reel on a reel-to-reel machine, play it back, and just record it into a computer. It doesn't work like that. You have to bake the tapes. So you literally put these things in like an oven. Because,
oh, really?
Yes, because the magnetic resonance is lost on the tape. So you bake the tapes, and then you take and transfer over the sound digitally into a digital file.
Now, when you transferred it, did you get more EVPs because it was clear? Because I don't know how I mean, obviously I've heard recordings on the TV, but they always bring them up. But have you ever heard all those Any of those old reel-to-reel?
Yes.
Where they caught something?
Yeah. I have heard, well, I've heard the recordings from the Warrens, yeah. I don't think baking tapes does anything one way or another to, to enhance any EVP or anything like that. I think all it does is it's a way of preserving what's left on the tape. So if there's any degradation of the tape, the actual filament or anything that's on the tape, it's keeping what's there on the tape in order to preserve it and be able to, because it does break down over time too, the filament that's on the tape. So it's just a way of preserving what's there when you go to play it back, because that can snap as well when you're playing it.
Can you imagine the field day the pioneers of the paranormal research would have with the technology we have today?
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, think about it. You're probably doing the Polaroid pictures to take, now you have digital cameras where you can actually look at it as you do it. But back then you had to either do the Polaroid or you had to wait till the film was developed.
Well, in one respect, I think they would have had a field day, a heyday with it. In another, I think that they would have called a lot of stuff into question.
Because it can be manipulated.
Yes, it's easily manipulated. With them, it's hard to manipulate chemicals, and chemical reactions. Things appearing on something that's as solid as a Polaroid picture are hard. To them, was hard to do. Nowadays, we can tell you exactly how something was replicated in a photo. Especially an old school photo, because we can replicate it again and do it again and again and again with old school photographic technique. But we can do it with audio too. It's very easy to do it with audio, and we can tell you exactly how certain things with old school audio techniques could be replicated.
Mm-hmm.
With the newer stuff, digital filters are actually a godsend. They really are, because they do filter out a lot of the old analog noises that would have been misconstrued for spirits. But at the same time, they also, it could be argued, and there's two schools of thought here. The analog noises could help bring in, that white noise theory could help bring in a spirit that you may need to communicate with, the white noise theory.
Mm-hmm.
Or, the fact of the matter is if you're coming from a scientific point of view, well, that's a whole lot of, pardon my language, it's a whole lot of bullshit. If you've got digital filters on that are strong enough, you've got the white noise of just the natural hiss in the background, that sits there. You can use that to come in and use any type of background if you need it, if you feel you need it for a spirit to come through. There's more than enough there for a spirit to come through and want to talk. It's a device for them to use. The power of the device itself should be more than enough for a spirit to latch onto and be able to communicate with you. They shouldn't need any noise per se to come through and communicate. Hence, why would any of these other boxes work, but they do all work on the same theory of sound itself. The question still remains: do you need the noise or do you need the energy?
Well, that's why I like, when I do investigation, using both, the spirit box with the white noise in the background, you bring that out every once in a while, and then you have the digital recorder. So you can have both mediums, if that makes sense. I don't know if I'm that new school generation where I think of both are valuable theories and both can work, and to me, and anything you can do to catch evidence, have as much stuff going, recorders, spirit boxes, night vision cameras, thermal cameras, laser grids, everything, anything you can possibly get your hands on and use, because that just helps proving or disproving something's there.
Yeah, every tool in the toolbox is
it's just it's something, expensive.
Something it is expensive. It's something to look at, but in the end, they all have to collaborate each other in order for you to get something.
But I think that makes your evidence stronger. If four devices catch that at the exact same moment at the exact same time, and you can't replicate it, I think that just helps your evidence. But I also think it helps you disprove stuff too, where this picked this up, but this didn't pick this up because this was happening here. Well, we can redo that. You know, you see what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. That's my mentality when I go into investing, because I don't right away go, oh, that was a ghost bumping over there. No, let's go figure out what that was. Let's look for a natural cause of it. Mm. Can we replicate that? You know, there's like a checklist. You know that there's a checklist go through before you say, I don't know what it is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you know, that I think the investigators of yesteryear would have, I don't think they so much would have trusted it right away, but would have learned to work with it, you know, because they had their techniques from what they used too, you know, powder on the floor, table tipping, you know, things that they tended to use that people would have thought were bizarre and not in the realm of reality, but to them it worked, you know, always having a good psychic medium at their side, which to most investigators these days seems like hogwash or rubbish. You know, but to them it worked. It was a way to validate what it was that they were seeing in the instruments that they were using, which a lot of times with a lot of the older, like with Hans Holzer, he would say it was your eyes and ears and a good psychic medium, you know, to verify what you saw and what they saw.
Well, people have to understand your body is a instrument in itself when you investigate. Especially if you have a little bit of the sensitive, like you and I've talked off air that my wife, you know, is a little more sensitive than I am. So I love bringing her with me. She hates it, you know, cause she doesn't want to admit, but I love it because, you know, you have to listen to your body. Your hair stand up on the back of your neck for a reason. You know what I mean? And, and you get intuition, you know, even if you're not as sensitive, you still, your body's still tuned to everything, especially when you talk about how, the other world, the other realm needs to use energy. Well, we are energy too. And if you think about it, you know, you walk into a room that's got a lot of, you know, EMF or something, your hair stands on it. It's just, that's a natural occurrence to all that magnetic field, you know? Yeah. And like I said, I love bringing my wife with me to place. I don't tell her, hey, this is, you know, and I've gotten in trouble numerous times for it, you know, where she's found out afterwards.
Yet the marriage is still going strong. Curious.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. And she's, and you know what? Because I educate her, or if there's a question, we'll call you, or we'll call, you know, somebody else that's more of an expert than I am. She's getting a little more curious about it.
Oh, that's good.
And she's starting to lean towards willingly going on investigations.
Well, that's good. You know, that's good. Yeah. I mean, as long as you're careful, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, especially if she's more open than most.
Yeah. And that's why I always tell people, reach out to somebody that's more experienced than you. Ask questions. You know, I think I've talked to you even before I was on the podcast. I was talking to you at least once every other week, like with questions of something that had happened in my personal life. And, and you've explained it to me, you know, talking to Mandy about the Santeria stuff. Cause I'm not an expert on that. She obviously is, you know, and asking her and stuff. And don't ever think you're the best investigator in the world. There's always someone better than you, more educated than you, or has a different view. Be open to it.
Yeah.
Reach out and ask. And that's how you become a better investigator.
And when Bruiser says Mandy, it's Mandy Leon from Ring of Honor Wrestling. And she grew up around Santeria. We had her on the program once when we were on the Chris Jericho cruise. And she's fascinating. We're going to bring her on sometime for Supernatural News, and we'll talk to her a little bit about Santeria and what all goes into it. And people, I don't think, have an accurate understanding of what it is. So,
I know I didn't until I met her.
Yeah.
You know, I had my beliefs that I've read in the books that I've read or the stories that I've heard, but then actually talking to someone that was raised, you know what I mean? It's like, whole new view to look at. You know, that's why, like, I talk to you and I always ask you questions. It's a new view at things.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and I love being educated. That's the bottom line, you know, that's why I love the paranormal world, because we're all learning as we go along. We have the basis, which we were just talking about the pioneers, but we're all learning every day. There's something new coming out every day. And, you know, and in paranormal news, you know, supernatural news, there's something new that you and I are like, oh, hey, you know, and it, that's what's so amazing about it.
That's true. And speaking of supernatural news, we should probably get to it here. We have,
let's do it. Yes.
We have an interesting story here, to start it off here, Bruiser. And that is this. Alien tech may have crashed into the Pacific Ocean. This according to a Harvard professor who wants to hunt for it. Finally, a professor that wants to get out of the classroom and do something.
He wants to be Indiana Jones of the paranormal UFOs.
That's right. Normally, professors will just want to teach. They don't want to do anything. But this professor says he believes that technology is lying at the bottom of the Pacific Ocean, and he's plotting a mission to find out what exactly it is. Controversial astrophysicist Avi Leib, who, by the way, is going to be at that UFO disclosure symposium that we've been talking about, which we do have a description in the or we have a link to the description of this program. Did I say that right? I didn't say that right. I'm not saying my words right here.
No, that came out way wrong.
Yes. Okay. So in the description of this program, there's a link to the symposium that you can click on. You can get more information. Professor Avi Leib is in that, and he's one of the guests at the symposium. You could actually meet him at the symposium if you choose to go to Vernal, Utah. That's May 27th through the 29th. Or you can simply stream the conference from home, and you get a chance to see his presentation there. Controversial astrophysicist Avi Leib believes an interstellar object that crash landed on Earth in 2014 was some form of spacecraft. A U.S. Space Command report released last week confirmed that the object was from another star system. The agency concluded that the projectile, which streaked across the sky off the coast of Manus Island, Papua New Guinea. There's that word again, Papua New Guinea. It's such a cool place to live, I guess. Was a meteor.
Mama New Guinea is pretty cool, too.
Yeah, Mama. We shouldn't you know, disparage Mama. But Papua New Guinea is just the coolest name ever.
Yes.
The agency concluded that that projectile was a meteor. Professor Leib, however, is having none of it. He claimed that last week that the object could have been built by extraterrestrials. Our discovery of an interstellar meteor heralds a new research frontier, the Harvard astronomer wrote in an essay for the debrief. The fundamental question is whether any interstellar meteor might indicate a composition that is unambiguously artificial in origin. Better still, perhaps some technological components would survive the impact. Professor Leib has spent decades studying astronomy, and more recently has trained his sights on the possibility that life exists beyond Earth. His bold claims frequently make headlines, and he has faced criticism from others in his field over his outlandish extraterrestrial theories. Working with a student at Harvard professor, or working at, yeah, work, you got to forgive me here, Bruiser. I'm having a little bit of a tough time today. Working with a student at Harvard, Professor Leib was actually the astronomer who identified the object as interstellar a few years ago. The pair wrote a paper about it, but were instructed not to publish it because they used classified government data for their research. After the USSC confirmed their hunch on April 7th, Leib is calling for an expedition to find whatever is left of the object. In his essay, he noted that a retrieval expedition could be achieved using scooping magnets to explore the 10 square kilometer region of the Pacific Ocean where the objects are thought to have landed. My dream is to press some buttons or a functional piece of equipment that was manufactured outside of Earth, he added. The prolific astrophysicist is no stranger to controversy. He has produced provocative research on black holes, space radiation, the early universe, and other topics of his field. Over the past decade, his focus has been trained on a more contentious topic, the possibility that Earth has been visited by extraterrestrials. Professor Leib has repeatedly claimed that Oumuamua, which we've talked about quite often on the show, an interstellar object that zipped through the solar system in 2017, was technology sent by aliens. He doubled down on the heavily contested comments, which earned him headlines across the globe in a book published last year. What would happen if a caveman saw a cell phone? Leb wrote, he's seen rocks all his life, and he would probably have thought it was just a shiny rock. He took fault with astronomers who argued that the object was a comet, saying it was akin to letting the familiar to define what we might discover. Many scientists have rubbished his outlandish claims, branding them cavalier and irresponsible. Leb heads up the Galileo Project, which aims to establish a network of advanced telescopes that will scan the skies for signs of alien life. So there you go. But Professor Avi Leb will be at that symposium, UFO Disclosure Symposium in Vernal, Utah, May 27th through the 29th. You can click on that link in the description of this program, and you can get tickets to see it. It costs nothing to basically to look and check out the packages. So there you go.
Yeah. I to hear him speak would be amazing, because he does have some, even though they call him controversial, he points another, he has another view on it. One of the things that I like is I love that it's in the ocean, because I have a working theory I've been working on where I think a lot of these aliens, I don't want to say bases, but they have something under the water, because underwater is a lot, I don't want to say it's similar to space, but it is, because of the weightlessness. I know there's a lot of pressure and stuff like that. But if you're going to hide something, why not hide it in the deepest part of, you know, of the earth, which would be the middle of the ocean?
True. Well, there's different pressures out in space too, when you run across things like black holes and things like that.
So if they need something that's similar, why not build it in the ocean? And how many stories have we heard where someone's seen lights floating above a body of water, or something ascend from the water to the sky or into the water, you know?
True. Very true.
So I think that's a great place to start looking.
Very true. Well, there's one way to keep kids in line at school. We can't do it here in America, but evidently in South Africa, they found a way to keep kids in line, Bruiser.
Does it involve kendo sticks?
No, but it may be a popular saying of yours.
mouth punching time, huh?
Exactly. Children at a South African school are saying that a ghost granny has slapped them. And why not?
Get off my lawn!
You kids need to behave. Slap! An elementary school in South Africa was forced to cancel classes for the day after several children reported being physically attacked by an aggressive apparition resembling a little old lady. The bizarre incident reportedly occurred last week at the Faka Misani Primary School in the community of Plettenberg Bay, when several youngsters claimed that a short granny-like figure with dreadlocks had appeared before them in the classroom. Eerily, it was said that the suspected spirit was only visible to the students, and that it proceeded to slap the children until she, well, rather until they threw salt at it. So that's the only way you get rid of slapping granny, is throwing salt at it.
Why not? You know, like, so when we go to South Africa sometime, we see kids walking around salt in their pocket. We know why.
You go away now, granny. Here's the salt. I would throw a pepper at you, but I have none.
Go back to school, kids. Back to school.
Well, the very weird account may sound like some kind of mischief on the part of the students in the form of a prank being played on their teacher. The terror that swept over the classroom was seemingly very real. Administrators at the school were forced to cancel classes over the unfolding furor and call the pupils' parents to retrieve their children. Excitement over what was happening at the school spread quickly in social media in the area, and or to the point that word actually reached the mayor of the community, David Swart, who visited the school to see if everything was under control. Evidently not, if slapping granny was on the loose and you were getting reports.
I'm pretty sure he wanted to make sure that it wasn't real live teachers slapping the children, because then he'd have a lawsuit in his hands.
Yeah, that's true.
Can't sue a ghost.
Well, you could try. Here in America, you would succeed.
I like how they described her as a dreadlocked older woman. Like, she just knows how to party, you know?
Well, she may be a very old dreadlocked ghost, too, you know? She may not be necessarily new. I don't think she went to Jamaica to get those dreadlocks from anybody for like $13. I think that was probably, you know, a traditional deal. Offering an update to the situation to a local reporter, he relayed the remarkable story with sincerity, explaining that it seems like the kids saw an old lady in one of the classrooms and either this old lady chased them or she just disappeared. He went on to indicate that there's a bit of uncertainty as to what this woman was doing. If she existed and they are looking, it says it would appear that the investigation turned up no sign of any interloper matching the description of the mysterious ghost granny. And so the school plans to hold a prayer session this week in the hopes of thwarting the sinister spirit.
I hope she appears and slaps all those children during that seminar.
You're
that
praying wrong. Slap.
Get back to work.
Get back to
You're
work.
In school.
You kids don't pay attention well enough. We move on from slapping grannies to slapping.
That's an album title.
Yeah, to slapping grannies to bumping Scottish monsters.
Oh,
put
okay.
It that way. How do you like that? How do you like that segue there, Bruiser?
That was perfect.
I almost did a JR impression from when we were on the cruise. We were back in the green room, and he said, "How do you like that, Scotty?" And he was talking to Raven.
Yeah.
I think he was a little in his cups at the time. So, but he kept saying, "How do you like that, Scotty?"
When wasn't he a little in his cups? I watched him pee on the drum set for Kiss. Because remember Kiss had their equipment on there?
Oh, yeah.
And we were standing there. I think we were watching Fozzy. And JR comes walking past and goes, "When you got to go, you got to go." And he just whips it over the drum set. And I'm just like, me and Cheeseburger are looking at each other like, this is our life. Yeah. Like, this is happening right now.
That's it. That's fantasy meeting reality right there.
It is.
Doesn't get much better than that. That's for sure. Oh, Scottish monsters. I bet they pee on you when you come by.
see, well, that'd be kind of... How would you explain that if a cryptid peed on you? Like, if you're in the woods...
I'd be honored.
And you're in your campsite. I would, too. If Bigfoot just walked up and just started pissing all over my tent.
I'd try to figure out how to get the cell phone out of my pocket. I'd probably be in such shock. I probably wouldn't get my cell phone out of my pocket to take a picture, but I'd have a story.
Oh, definitely.
You know?
Definitely.
I'd
you
probably,
don't hear those a lot, do you?
Well, wouldn't you have DNA on you at that point?
Does your urine have DNA? Yeah, I guess so. I don't know that much about urine, too. Other than when I drink a lot of beer, it comes out of me.
See? So I think, pardon me. I think at that point, we have to take our pants off and run them to the nearest lab and get it tested.
Okay, I'm in. I'm in.
And at that point, they say, boy, a monkey just pissed on your pants. And that's all you get from them. You know, there's boy, a monkey just pissed on your pants. I don't know why they sound like somebody from King of the Hill, but they do in Scotland.
They do. They're big King of the Hill fans in Scotland.
Boy, a monkey just pissed on your pants. Yeah, so secret Scottish monster files were released by the National Museums of Scotland. We now know that the U.S. government has files on UFO and ET sightings, but what about data on Bigfoot, lake monsters, still living dinosaurs, and other cryptids? Well, it appears the U.S. is lagging behind Scotland when it comes to monster files. The National Museum of Scotland just made the public a large cache of national cryptid data. And there's much more beside blurry photos and early drawings of the Loch Ness Monster. They aren't just all whale dicks, believe it or not. No, they aren't, Bruiser. I'm sorry. I know. I'm
so Zelda. That's what it was.
It's a callback.
Whale dicks everywhere.
Yeah, it's a callback to last week. I know you're disappointed to know it's not just all drawings of whale dicks. While they do show variations on the original hoax photos of Nessie, the best part of the files are accounts of little-known Scottish creatures, like the Stronsay Beast. The Stronsay Beast. It says, this is a quote here, "I was quite staggered when I first saw the sketch. My first reaction was that such a creature would explain a lot of the apparently odd descriptions of the Loch Ness Monster and also such photographs as the three bumps, or humps rather, taken by Lachlan Stewart in 1951. The odd fleshy lobes hanging from the head would also or have also been variously described by witnesses. The Daily Mail obtained access to the monster files and revealed the 1936 drawing of what looks like a flabby, overweight dinosaur. I'm sure they don't think so. The dinosaur doesn't think they're flabby and overweight.
Oh, dinosaur thinks he's handsome and sexy and
right. Yeah,
is ready for play dinosaur cover.
That's right. They said with floppy basset hound ears and a mouth built like a vacuum hose. Oh, this is so mean to the dinosaur. Rather than a monster's maw. Oh my God, that is so mean. Also said to have been drawn by local resident Alistair Dallas. It surfaced in 1975, the drawing, not the monster, by the way. And expert Ian H.J. Leister of the Royal Scottish Museum was staggered, it said, claiming that it must be real because hoaxers would not go to all the trouble. The belly-rolled beast supposedly came ashore near the village of, is this Drumna Drocket? In September of 1936, 3 years after Aldi MacKay reportedly saw something like a hole or like a whale in Loch Ness, and 2 years after London gynecologist Robert Kenneth Wilson began the now famous surgeon's photo hoax. And if anybody knows how to hoax a body part, it's a gynecologist.
It sure is.
I'm just saying.
He sees them every day.
That's right. If anybody knows how to draw a whale dick, it's a gynecologist. I'm just saying.
It is. I like that they added the floppy ears and the vacuum mouth.
Yes. Originally kept by the keepers, this is a quote of the Natural Sciences Department, the files contain letters written by seemingly baffled and in some cases seemingly shaken citizens who have contacted museum keepers in search of information. The Scotsman reports the files describe encounters with the Black Dog of Loch Buoy, a ghost dog said to roam around Loch Buoy House on Mull, scaring guests with its horrible appearance. Then here's the Stronsbay beast, about 55 long, unidentifiable carcass reported to have washed ashore after a storm on the island of Stronsay in the Orkney Islands. The natural history.
They say what happened to the carcass?
No. Unless I'm coming up on it here. Yeah, the sorry. Natural History Society, Wernerian Society of Edinburgh, could not identify the carcass and decided it was probably a sea serpent. Well, some accounts gave it a long neck and three pairs of legs. Scientists later said it was, pardon me, more like 36 feet in length, and it probably a decayed basking shark. Yet another sea serpent drawing, dated 1950, came from a site in the Gulf of, oh my gosh, look at these names, Corryvreckan, off the west coast of mainland Scotland. I think somebody did this for a joke. Adding to the Ness Loch monster list was a sea serpent spotted at Loch Craignish near Oban in western Scotland. The papers and letters are predominantly from the 1930s to 1950s when the modern Loch Ness monster sightings began and monster mania spread across Scotland. The files were kept in dated folders marked letters about alleged monsters and not exactly a vote of confidence for believers. The files also include some responses sent to inquiries about eyewitness drawings. I do not think they will prove to me any relics of the past, but of course there are still creatures in the sea we do not know about. It is possible the creatures you describe are some deep sea fish like the myriad eel. Dr. Stephen Keeper of the Natural History Department sent that response to the people who mailed in the 1950 drawing in the sighting of the Gulf of Corryvreckan. The myriad he refers to as the moray eel. It is indeed ironic that such files exist of so many cryptid sightings, and Inverness residents celebrate the third Loch Ness monster sighting of 2022, while at the same time politicians claim the Scottish government is using the Loch Ness monster as propaganda in schools in the debate over Scotland leaving the UK. How can they politicize one monster while ignoring stacks of data on so much more? I think this is kind of an editorial at the end of the article, but there you go.
I'm curious why they don't acknowledge the other monsters. I know a lot, Nessie's the most famous, but right there you just described an additional four or five other ones that they could be using also. You know, I'm surprised, like, you know, that that wrestling buddy that I had made and well, they're for purchase and stuff. Mm-hmm. The company Brothers Godor that makes them, they're right next to Lake Champlain.
Really?
And they've offered that when I, you know, if I'm ever in the area to come to a signing there, but then they'll take me to the lake and look for, what is that, Champy, I believe his name is?
Yeah, Champ.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they said when I, you know, we're working out the deal and they found out, you know, I'm into the paranormal and crypto and stuff. They're like, oh, we've been looking for Champ for years. And the guy's got pictures of him. And I was like, oh, that's awesome.
Really?
And I don't know why. I mean, Scotland's got far more than the United States does as far as sea monsters, but still.
Huh. Interesting. Interesting indeed. One more story before we go to break here. A creepy figure shows up in a photo at a notoriously haunted jail. Paranormal investigator Candace Collins maintains that this image shows, and you can't see it because it's podcasting, this image shows the spirit of an old man with glasses. It was built in 1979 before closing down in 1927. Bodmin Jail is nestled at the edge of Bodmin Moor in Cornwall, England, where it has been or since been turned into a hotel, museum, and gift shop. Over the years, its haunted reputation has also attracted the attention of numerous ghost hunting shows, paranormal investigators, and others keen to experience something unexplained. One such visitor was Candace Collins, who 15 years ago was captured on camera next to a rather unexpected extra. The image, which was lost until very recently when she moved her house and found it again, has since been generating a great deal of interest on social media. I caught some fantastic paranormal evidence at Bodmin Jail before it was turned into a hotel, she said. This was a snap on a camera while walking around taking pictures. It's a full-body spirit of an old man in a suit with glasses and hairline that is in my photo and when we were the only people there. I moved house shortly after taking the picture and lost it in the move. I looked everywhere for this picture for years and couldn't find it till I was going through an old folder yesterday, and there it was. I was amazed to find it after all that time. The image is certainly intriguing. The ghost, which is visible on the right-hand side, of the picture, that is, does resemble the shape of a figure. However, it's unclear if it's genuinely paranormal or simply a case of pareidolia, the tendency for the human brain to see meaningful shapes and otherwise abstract patterns. I'm just sorry, I paused because I'm taking a look at the picture. Kind of hard to tell, Berzer, to be honest with you, when I look at it. I don't necessarily see what she's looking at, but other
so it's
than
not
me.
A true definitive right there is where the man is.
Yeah,
it's that you got to look at it type thing.
Exactly. You kind of have to strain, you kind of have to kind of, I think you got to put a little imagination into it.
Why don't ghosts just come on, when you know we're taking your picture, just come on out, show yourself. Make come, our job so much easier.
Come out and show yourself. We won't hurt ya. Yeah, that's what they think. Tell you what, let's take a break. When we come back, the U.S. government tried to blow up the moon. It's true. This is recently.
We need that.
Yeah,
we don't.
We need that. As if supernovas were supernovas.
Supernova.
A highway supernova in the sky wasn't enough to worry about. Now we got micronovas to worry about. David Bowie thought he was talking to his dad or was worried about talking to his dad before he passed. We'll find out about that. And Bruiser, I teased it early in the program. We have a famous obit to talk about.
Okay.
This famous woman who was actually mentioned in a song at one time has passed, and she's famous for a certain type of art.
Okay.
And we'll learn more about her. She may not be a household name, but by gosh, she will be after this story. And we'll remember her one more time as she casts the mortal coil. We'll remember you well. That'll come up next on the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. Welcome back to the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. It's a Supernatural News Wednesday. I'm Tim Dennis, and that's Beer City Bruiser. I should explain to everybody, I'm kind of fighting through a little bit of the flu. No, it's not COVID. It is definitely a flu bug, but I'm doing my best to not cough all over the microphone while I'm reading today.
You don't look your jovial self normally. Yeah. Normally you're all... When we do this, we can see each other, and you're always moving around with your hands and everything. Now you're just kind of you look sick. So please feel better.
I will. I will. I'm trying not to expel my innards all over the place, and I'm trying not to put it in any more of a gross way other than that. But yeah.
Well, I appreciate that because I can see you. So.
Well, I learned a trick. Here's an interesting trick for those of you that. May deal with nausea if you have migraine headaches or you deal with nausea on a regular basis for one reason or another. When I went and got, I'm getting the monthly shots in the eye now for the issue I had with my eye. And they use when they go to do a certain scan on your retina, they use this dye that can cause nausea. And I've never had this issue before with this dye, but it happened the last time they used it. And I felt like, oh, here it comes. And they said, what's wrong? And I said, I'm really feeling nauseous. I'm starting to feel sick. And they said, oh, no, that's not good. And they said, here. And they handed me one of those, you know how like at Walmart, they have the glass lens wipes, you know?
The alcoholic wipes, yeah.
Yeah, the alcohol wipes. So they handed me one of those. And... they put a Starlight peppermint in my mouth, you know, the red and white little round peppermints, hard candies. Mm-hmm. And then they put a cool compress on the back of my neck. And I'll be darned, 30 to 45 seconds later, it went away.
Okay.
Yeah. So no more nausea.
So when I'm getting out of this, if I'm nauseous, just take a shot of peppermint schnapps.
No. That's not quite the same thing, Bruiser. You could try that. Actually, that works really well for a sore throat if you let it run down the back of your throat. My uncle taught me that at the age of 14. My dad was not happy. But I've got this bottle of 70% alcohol right here. So I just kind of, I'm kind of huffing it as we go along in the program to kind of keep my gag reflex down. That's what she said. What?
hey, hi-o.
I've got the 70% isopropyl alcohol out, so I'm huffing that, and I'm occasionally I shut my mic off so I can cough, and it's kind of fun like that. Anyways, people don't care about what's going on with me.
You're being a trooper, and we appreciate it.
Well,
you are appreciated, Tim.
You got to do what you got to do. Let's move on, shall we? We used to worry about supernovas taking out our galaxy. Now we got to worry about micronovas, which any guy worries about micro anything and being found out. But now you got to worry about a micronova explosion. And this micronova that was out there in space, and it was found just recently, burned through tons of material within hours. Turns out that astronomers have discovered a new kind of star explosion called a micronova, although it may be smaller than the giant supernova explosions that claim the lives of stars. This incendiary event still packs a punch. Each micronova can burn through around 3.5 billion Great Pyramids of Giza of material.
Oh, wow.
Yikes.
That is a lot of material.
Yeah, it is. Or about 20... million trillion kilograms in just a few hours. Try and wrap your head around that for a second. That's a lot.
That'll definitely make your hot pocket hot.
Yeah, well. These extremely powerful outbursts can occur on the surface of your white dwarf. I mean, of white dwarfs. Well, of your white dwarf, too. Or dead stars about as small as our planet, based on observations made by a team of astronomers using the European Southern Observatory's Very Large Telescope in Chile's Atacama Desert. I love that they have to name it the Very Large Telescope. Someone has a size issue over there. in Chile.
I bet what it was is they had a committee trying to decide what the name was, and everyone's throwing out names, and finally the guy who's in charge goes, you know what, I'm sick of this, we're just calling it the Very Large Telescope.
I have a feeling like Tony Montana is in charge of the Very Large Telescope down there. He goes, you know what, here's what I'm going to name it, man. It's the European South Observatory's Very Large Telescope. You don't argue with me, man. It's a very large telescope.
So when they go to like different meetings and stuff like that, oh, you want to talk about your telescope? We have the Very Large Telescope.
You may have a good telescope, man. It's a very good telescope, man. It's pretty large, but this it's one large. Is a very large telescope, man. Yeah, I sense a little envy there.
I do too.
We have discovered and identified for the first time what we are calling a micronova, said the lead study author, Simone Scaringi.
There's a lot of size reference in this article.
There is, yeah.
You have the Very Large Telescope finding the
micronovas
in a white dwarf.
Easy to see, man, because I have a very large telescope, and this is a very micronova.
And a white dwarf.
The astronomer and assistant professor at Durham University in the United Kingdom in a statement said the phenomena. Challenges our understanding of how thermonuclear explosions in stars occur. We thought we knew this, but this discovery proposes a totally new way to achieve them. Words is crossing their eyes in front of me, Bruisers. What's happening right now? A study detailing the findings published Wednesday in the journal Nature. White dwarf stars are found paired with other stars, and they draw hydrogen from their companions like zombies feeding on their fellow stars. They had to work The Walking Dead into this deal, too.
I was going to say, they had to make it modern by throwing in zombies.
Yeah. When the gas encounters the piping hot surface of the white dwarf, the hydrogen atoms fuse into helium, triggering an explosion. These events are known as novae. Hey,
novae.
Novae. Such detonations make the entire surface of the white dwarf burn and shine brightly for several weeks, said study co-author Nathalie DeGenar, an astronomer and assistant professor at the University of Amsterdam, in a statement. I'm surprised they even have time to study over there, to be honest with you, at the University of Amsterdam.
They got to have some kick-ass parties going on you're on campus.
Kidding. Yeah, you go straight to the dispensary. Micronovae are smaller than typical novae and only last a few hours. That's what she said. Micronovae explosions occur on white dwarfs and that have strong magnetic fields which send material towards the star's poles. This trajectory causes the hydrogen fusion reactions to occur in more localized spots at the magnetic poles. This illustration, which you can't see, shows a two-star system. A blue disk of material can be seen swirling around a white dwarf as it pulls materials away from a comparison star. This leads to microfusion bombs going off, which have about 1/1,000,000th of the strength of a nova explosion, hence the name micronova. And there you go. That's how you get the name. So that's what a micronova is.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. It's terrifying, but pretty cool.
Terrifying, but cool.
Now, Oasis has to write a new song because they have Champagne Supernova. So now they got to have something like Boxed Wine Micronova.
Yeah. I'm really embarrassed. Let's say I'm scariest. You just saw my micronova in the sky.
There it is.
Yeah, that's the song.
It's on the new album by Bruise and the Cruiser called Slapping Grannies.
Slapping Grannies, yeah. that is true. Yes, it is.
You come just on, put our number one hit.
Coming out this fall on Arista Records. Bruiser and the Cruiser, Slapping Grannies, with a new song, Micronova.
Boxed Wine Micronova.
Boxed Wine Micronova. Look for it this fall on Arista Records.
Phenomena.
Yeah. Meanwhile, while the micronovae is going on one side of the universe, the U.S. government proposed to nuke the moon just to offset one explosion.
But we need the moon.
Or do
come on,
we?
Government.
Or do we, Bruiser?
It's what causes tides. It's what helps with gravity. Like, come on, we need the moon.
But we could get rid of all that, Bruiser, if we just put a nuke in the moon.
No. Right? They're not really thinking this through, are they?
Well, maybe. The agency was funding secret research, is what happened. The U.S. government's now defunct AATIP, Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, spent millions of taxpayers' dollars to research bizarre experimental technology, such as invisibility cloaks, which we went over last week, anti-gravity devices, we talked about that too, traversable wormholes, we haven't really talked about that, but you know, you get the picture, and a proposal to tunnel through the moon with nuclear explosives, because why not? We got cash.
Because we need a shortcut through the moon right now?
Well, you see, if you put a shortcut through the moon then, Bruiser, you don't have to fly around it to get to other planets.
But then, how are they going to do all these space movies where the only way to get back to Earth is to launch yourself around the moon to get the exact G-force to launch yourself back into towards Earth?
Screw it. You just go through it.
Yeah. Just keep going.
Plus, we all know, Bruiser, the center of the moon is where all the good cheese is. Come on, man.
But wait, what? Now this is going to screw. Do you know? I know why they were going to do it. They wanted to prove all the conspiracy theorists out there saying that the moon is hollow and a space station.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, we're going to blow a hole through the middle of it. Now what you got to say?
The geospherical whatcha-whoosits is in the middle. Yeah.
See?
We'll blow it all to shit, and we'll see if there's anything in it.
Who cares what it does to us here on Earth? You guys are proven wrong.
That's right.
Or are they?
Or are they? The documents, which include nearly 1,600 pages of reports, proposals, contracts, and meeting notes, that's how serious they were about this, folks.
Somebody's bored.
Yep. Reveal some of the strange priorities of AATIP, a secretive Department of Defense program that ran from 2007 to 2012. But only became known to the public in 2017 when the program's former director resigned from the Pentagon. That year, AATIP became synonymous with UFOs. When I say phenomena, do I do this?
Phenomena.
No?
No.
Okay.
That's more of the phenomena, not the phenomena.
Okay. Thanks to several now infamous videos of an unidentified aircraft moving in seemingly impossible ways that former director Luis Elizondo leaked to the press after his resignation. But the new document suggests that AATIP was up to more than just investigating and reported UFO encounters. The entire cache of 51 documents obtained by Vice via a Freedom of Information Act filed 4 years ago can be read, well, in this link that you can't click because obviously we're on podcast. Perhaps more intriguing among the documents are the several dozen defense intelligence reference documents, or DIRDs, which is one letter away from turds, and that makes me giggle, which discuss the viability of various advanced technologies. This collection includes reports on traversable wormholes, stargates, and negative energy, high-frequency gravitational wave communications, warp drive, dark energy, and the manipulation of extra dimensions, and many other topics that would sound familiar to fans of science fiction. Many of the reports stress the impracticalities of implementing advanced technologies. In the DIRD reports on invisible cloaking, for example, the authors whose names have been redacted in all the reports, they write that perfect cloaking devices are impossible because they require materials where the speed of light approaches infinity. However, cloaking devices that make objects invisible to microwave-based sensors, such as radars and motion detectors, are definitely within the reach of present technology. Other reports do not shy away from the bold, sometimes outlandish proposals for realizing advanced technologies in the report, and on negative mass propulsion, the authors propose a plan to look for extremely lightweight materials in the center of the moon that may be 1,000 times lighter than steel, but still have the strength of steel. To reach the center of the moon, the authors suggest blasting a tunnel through the lunar crust and mantle using thermonuclear explosives. There you go. That's how they get it.
But you never want to go through lunar crust. Come on. I like the crust on my moon.
Yeah, I mean, it's an extra feature, and we don't really want to get rid of those. It says, of course, the U.S. has not nuked the moon and shows no immediate intention of doing so. NASA's upcoming Artemis missions plan to return humans to the moon for the first time since the Apollo era, with the ultimate goal of establishing a sustainable human presence there. Rattling the moon with nuclear explosions would likely prove contrary to that mission. You know, interestingly enough, I saw an interview with, I don't remember the name of the astronaut, but he's been up to space like 6 times, I believe it is.
Okay.
And he said that they're looking at the moon as a practice mission for Mars.
I can see that.
Yeah. So it's kind of their way of practicing to go to Mars.
Yeah. I assumed that moon would be the way that we go to, you know, how can we get to other planets?
Yeah. So I find that story interesting. And by the way, I'm going to pimp this out one more time. The UFO Disclosure Symposium is going to have a lot of this information there. It's not just the four videos, the four top secret videos that you'll be able to see that were hidden behind top secret documents for the longest time. You're going to hear about a lot of these topics that were top secret for the longest time. You're going to hear the specifics behind them. So by all means, click on that link in the description of the show and get your tickets. And a lot of these speakers that will be talking about these topics. I got a parachute here, Bruiser, that ties into a story, our next story.
Okay, let's listen to it.
This one comes from Diana. She says, hello, tantalizing Tim and bodacious Bruiser.
Oh, hello.
Bodacious Bruiser.
Yeah.
This happened around 13 years ago in Georgia. I was doing food delivery for a living at the time and drove the area a lot. Well, one day when I was driving on the little shortcut road, which I was often taking, I saw what I thought was a bird, like a brown thrasher or robin, go running into the road. When I got close to it, it was actually a little man running across the road, not a bird. Well, that's weird.
That's creepy.
Yeah. He had on a little gnome-type hat that was brown and a little brown coat with tails. He then disappeared into the tall grass on the other side. I drove that road many more times while working that job and never saw him since. Something that occurred to me that isn't related to this, but to the names on the USB drive that is going to the moon that you guys talked about. We talked about that a few weeks ago. What if it's really a menu for whoever's living on the moon? The Twilight Zone episode To Serve Man was what came to mind. I think I'll keep my name here on Earth, LOL. Love your show, Diana. You know, Diana, you bring up a good point about the moon. What if it is? I'm keeping my name here. Yeah, I'm not sending it up to the moon. Interestingly enough, Bruiser, there is a story out, and it's fresh, that says that human hobbit ancestor may be hiding in Indonesia.
See, you hear a lot of the hobbit or dwarf elves or gnomes, whatever you want to call them, but it's primarily UK or European based.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, because she was in Georgia, she said when she saw this.
Yes. Yep.
If you think about it, if we were able to travel overseas on all the ships and stuff, why couldn't they hitch a ride? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And make resonance somewhere. So I think that's amazing that she saw that.
It is. But here's the kicker. Experts on the hobbit, Homo floresiensis, doubt it. It was hard for me to get that word out there. Sorry, Diana. Between about 700,000 years ago and about 60,000 years ago, a diminutive early human walked the island of Flores, what is now Indonesia. Homo floresiensis, nicknamed the Hobbit because it stood about 3 feet 6 inches, 106 centimeters tall, was a small brained, large-footed toolmaker, and no one knows where it evolved from. Now, one anthropologist is arguing that no one really sees what H. floresiensis were extinct or went extinct. No one really knows when it went extinct. There we go. And that it may survive into the modern day. In a new book, Gregory Forth, an anthropologist retired from the University of Alberta, argues that reports of an ape man on Flores could be sightings of the ancient human ancestor still kicking today. We simply don't know when this species became extinct, or indeed, dare I say, and I did dare say, we don't even know if it is extinct, Forth told Live Science. So there is some possibility that's still alive. Needless to say, this is a dramatic claim, and the experts who study H. Florecensis, are skeptical. Flores is an island that is about the same area as Connecticut, about the same size, and has 2 million people living on it today, said John Hawks, a paleoanthropologist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. The population is spread out across the island, he added. Realistically, the idea is that there's a large primate that is unobserved on this island, and surviving in a population that can sustain itself is pretty close to zero, Hawks told Live Science. Forth sees it differently. He has been doing anthropological field work on the island since 1984, and since that time has heard local stories of small, hairy humanoid creatures living in the forest. He wrote that about these tales in his research until 2003, when Florecensis, hard to say, was discovered. It was then, he told Live Science, that he made the connection. I heard about these similarly small human-like creatures in a region called Leo, which were said to be alive, and people were giving accounts of what they looked like, Forth said. In one excerpt from his new book, Between Ape and Human, An Anthropologist on the Trail of a Hidden Hominid, Forth describes an interview with a man who says he disposed of the corpse of a creature that could not have been a monkey, but was also not human. With straight, light-colored hair on its body, a well-formed nose, and a stub of a tail. Over the years, Forth collected 30 eyewitness accounts of similar creatures that he said matched the description of H. florecensis. Of course, there are many eyewitness accounts of cryptic creatures around the world, such as Sasquatch in the Pacific Northwest and British Columbia, that, according to Mark Collard, an evolutionary anthropologist based at Simon Fraser University in Canada, humans are adept at telling and believing stories, Collard told Live Science, and those stories can easily become central to people's beliefs. The tales of these ape men on Flores are different from those then of Bigfoot in the Pacific Northwest, Forth argued, because there have never been non-human apes in North America. But in Flores, he said, H. florecensis, there we go, indubitably does exist. But how long did they exist? Well, the bones were first found in Liangbua Cave on Flores in 2003. The youngest evidence of hobbits using the cave dates back to about 50,000 years ago. Humans didn't appear on Flores until 47,000 years ago, and there's no evidence that the two species overlapped at Liangbua in that cave. In fact, H. florecensis, wasn't using the site much after 60,000 years ago. So there you go.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. So who knows, Diana? That might have been a small hobbit. It might have been a leprechaun.
Something cryptid and small. And like I said, I don't see why they wouldn't be in North America. You know, they're all over Europe. They're all over Germany, Ireland, UK, all of that. So why couldn't they get on a ship with our early settlers?
Yeah.
When they came over, and of course they're going to migrate, you know, they're going to go where humans go.
Yeah.
So I can see, and from the way she described it, didn't sound like it was furry and all that. He had a little jacket and a little hat, you know?
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting to see.
They might
I'm curious what area of Georgia that is.
I don't know. They might have tiny tailors too. You never know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tiny cobblers that make tiny shoes and tiny beef stew for them to eat at night. It's the cutest thing ever. Really. I hope you didn't hit them with your car, Diana. That's what I hope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be sad.
It would be sad. I don't know why my mind floats there, but it just does.
But she said it got across the road.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. So yeah. It got away.
To get to the other side to
to cobble.
To cobble and to protect its gold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She should have followed them. She could have been rich.
Well, either that or they would have captured her. They would have probably, 30 of them would have tied her down and she would have never saw her family again.
She wakes up in some weird world.
Yeah. It would have been the subject of some sort of horror movie. Yeah. Yeah. It's probably better, Diana, just continue delivering food at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But still, hopefully it comes back and she can see it.
Well, you mean like a regular visit, like a regular little friend?
Well, no, because that would terrify her.
Well, just comes back
assuming.
And goes, "Hello, Diana. I've returned. Here I am.
Did you by chance have my food that I ordered?
I
ordered some beef stew. Do you happen to have it?
Yeah. Maybe they could be friends, like friends from different species.
I don't think they want to be friends, though, if they're so hidden. That's like Bigfoot. I don't think Bigfoot wants to be friends with anybody. He just wants to hide.
Maybe Bigfoot wants to be friends with us, but we're just assholes. Maybe that's the deal.
What if these guys keep Bigfoot as a pet?
Oh, now you're talking.
Yeah.
Maybe they have Bigfoot on a leash all day long.
Yeah, exactly.
Just this little leprechaun
little guy
pulling.
So all the Bigfoot videos, you don't see the little guy behind him.
That's right.
Whipping him to plow the field.
Little guy riding on a little unicorn with Bigfoot on a leash. It could happen.
Love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
You never know. We can't discount anything here.
No.
You want to hear about the Australian Skinwalker Ranch?
Actually, yes, I do, because I am super intrigued by Skinwalker Ranch. I wish it was open to the public. It would be a dream to visit there.
Well, again, Vernal, Utah. Now, I have to mention this. I'm going to keep tying this back into this UFO disclosure symposium. I had somebody send me an email, and God love you. I appreciate you mentioning it. The reason I haven't mentioned that Vernal, Utah is near Skinwalker, and it is, it's practically right on top of it, is because Skinwalker is not open to the public.
Yeah, you can't just walk in. And they have heavily armed security on the property.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like saying, oh, by the way, that conference is going to be right near Area 51. You should walk in and ask for a tour. It doesn't happen that way. No.
Nope. Again, heavily armed security.
Right. Now, the chances of you seeing something that may be out of the ordinary might happen. You never know. But, you know, you may see some strange lights in the sky, or you might see something that you wouldn't see back home. That's a good selling point for going to Vernal, Utah to this conference. But it's not like you can just go walk, you know, down the road and go hang out at the Skinwalker Ranch. There's not going to be a huge invite, or no one's going to say, hey, let's take a trip over to Skinwalker and get a good look, shall we?
Well, one of the speakers is a scientist on Skinwalker Ranch currently.
Yeah, Travis is going to be there, and he's going to be speaking.
Just ask him all the questions, and maybe you can befriend him, and I don't know.
He'll have you on a season. No, I'm just making stuff up. You can't expect, you know, just because something is somewhere, you can't expect that you're going to go over and see it.
That's the other thing people got to keep in mind too. If they want to get into investigating anything, a lot of these places are private property, and you have to get permission to go there.
Yeah.
Whether it be a haunted house, whether it be Skinwalker Ranch, whether it be a haunted plantation in Georgia, Louisiana, you know, you have to get permission to go. Out here, Bray Road. So you have the Beast of Bray Road. That whole road is owned by different farmers.
Yeah.
And they're, if you stop and ask them if they can, you can look around, they're more than happy to let you as long as you're responsible and respectful.
Yeah.
But it's not like you can just stop, get out of your car, and start walking around looking for the Beast of Bray Road, because you're walking on their farmland. You know, that's how they make a living.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
and this is how it is with Skinwalker Ranch. You can't just leave the symposium and walk on over to Skinwalker Ranch and think they're going to welcome you with open arms. they have armed guards there.
Yeah, they won't. They just won't. So will we talk about the Australian version of Skinwalker Ranch? We can go there in our mind rather than try to trespass in person. With the release of a recent book and several television productions, public attention to the remote area of Utah known as Skinwalker Ranch has grown. Competing sites such as Blind Frog Ranch, which is also in Utah, have cropped up as well, along with others. What they share in common is a series of reports of unexplained objects in the sky, bizarre creatures, haunting sounds, and non-corporeal figures. Based on these tales, one might be tempted to assume that this sort of
phenomena
is restricted to the American West. These types of hotspots, or window areas have been reported elsewhere. This reporter that wrote this article recently interviewed some people associated with an area that appears to be strikingly similar on the other side of the world. Kinyambi Station is a cattle ranch in Australia located in the northeastern corner of South Australia near the border of New South Wales. It's one of the live connected ranges currently owned by the Muturu Pastoral Company and is home to more than 9,000 cattle. It's a desolate stretch of wilderness covering 3 million acres of land, with the nearest small village being more than just 100 kilometers away. And in the 1980s, it was reportedly home to more than just livestock and kangaroos. The reporter interviewed one witness who shall be referred to as Robert, a pseudonym, as he is still uncomfortable with discussing the subject in public. In 1984, Robert was an 18-year-old working on the cattle station as part of a team that hunted rabbits, an invasive species causing issues for the native wildlife. That's something to think about, rabbits being an invasive species.
Yeah.
For a contractor that used them for pet food and pelts. In the 1800s, Sir Henry Kidman, the original owner of the ranching land, had constructed a new homestead in the northern reaches of the range near the dingo and rabbit fence that now separates the state from New South Wales. He and his family would later abandon it and move to a new homestead 80 kilometers to the south. Robert's crew used the abandoned homestead as a base of operations. The men worked at night to avoid the blistering desert heat during the day. They set up camp in the kitchen of the rear of the homestead. It was the only usable room, as much as the rest of the building was filled with the drifting sand and rooms that could not be accessed because the doors were not functional. They would take their four-wheel vehicles out at night to hunt rabbits, returning in the morning to rest. Soon after starting work in this remote location, Robert began to see the inexplicable lights that Australia is famous for, known as the Min Min lights. They were of various colors and usually far off in the distance across the sand dunes. That is until one night when one of them wasn't. Robert and his mate saw a bright white light down near the ground between two dunes, roughly a kilometer away. Robert described it as being white and intensely bright. At first, they thought it might be the bright headlights of a vehicle, though there shouldn't have been any other vehicles in the region at that time. Being hunters, the men had rifles with scopes on them. They looked through their scopes and observed a patch of land between the two dunes, roughly 50 meters across, that he described as being lit up as bright as day, though it was a moonless night. They could not see any source of the light. It seemed as if it was simply springing from the ground. No unusual structures or life forms were seen in the brightly lit area. The men returned to their vehicles and began driving toward the light to investigate. But before they had traveled more than 20 meters toward the unusual sight, the light vanished and the landscape returned to the same state of darkness as the rest of the area. They proceeded forward to the spot where the light had been but found nothing unusual. Robert described the team as being freaked out for a short time, but they eventually moved on and resumed their hunting for the rest of the night. Upon returning to the homestead in the morning, the man recounted their experience to the contractor they worked for. Rather than laughing at them, he nodded and told the young man that strange shit happens up here, and they should steer clear of anything unusual that they might see, because you don't want to attach it to yourself. He would later go on to tell them in a very serious tone that there were surreal entities that inhabited the area, some good ones here and some not so good. Following that incident, more strange events unfolded. The team encountered a series of inexplicable electrical and mechanical issues with their four-wheel drive vehicle. Attempts at repairs were ineffective, but then the truck would suddenly begin operating normally again. At one point, there was a significant electrical failure. One of the men said aloud, "Come on, mate, you've had your fun, we have work to do. Can you please turn your lights back on?" The vehicle started back up normally, and they had no further incidents with it. Whatever anomaly the men were interacting with wasn't finished with them yet. However, on the next trip to the homestead, while out hunting rabbits, an enormous sky blast took place. A bright globe in the sky appeared and erupted into a massive bright light lasting for several seconds, lighting up the night sky from horizon to horizon. It left behind an enormous glowing orange ring, or a halo, taking up a third of the sky. When the men's night vision returned, they looked around and saw what they described as a pure white kangaroo standing barely 20 feet in front of them. Albinism is known in kangaroos, and the men had seen them on rare occasions, but they tended to have a dirty reddish color to them because of the sand in that area. They described this one as seeming to glow and be pure white. The men climbed back into their vehicle to turn on their spotlight and to get a better look at what they did, or to get a better look, but when they did, the kangaroo was gone. They were in a vast, flat expanse of the desert with no place for the animal to hide, but it had seemingly just vanished. The men continued their work, and then returned to the homestead before finishing that trip and returning home. Robert subsequently returned for another work tour, which would wind up being his last. One evening, as the men were preparing to head out for the night's hunt, Robert felt ill, as if he had a cold coming on. His mates departed for the night's hunting, and he remained behind to try to get some rest. Because of the nocturnal nature of the job, the men had never slept in the homestead at night, only resting there during the day. The night would be one that Robert would never forget. At around 9 p.m., Robert lay down in the kitchen area where the men trade their camp, or rather where the men made their camp, to try to get some sleep. But as soon as he put out the lights, he began to hear some voices outside and the banging of a door. Thinking his partners had returned early, he went to investigate, but there was nobody outside. He returned to the kitchen, but then heard a door slam elsewhere in the house. None of the doors were functional, so this was an alarming development. Robert grabbed a flashlight to take a tour of the outside of the house by looking for trespassers. He saw nothing and returned to the kitchen. By 11 that night, Robert could hear what sounded like the muffled conversations of men and women talking in other parts of the house. He heard boots walking on the floors of the abandoned building. He would hear the rattling of plates and glasses clinking as if there was a party taking place. From outside, he heard the sounds of a horse and buggy in the yard. There was also the accordion music. Robert spent part of the night in an abandoned outbuilding on the site, trying to get some rest. The next morning, when everyone returned, Robert told his mates, as well as the contractor, about the overnight events. The contractor laughed and told them that's why he was always silent in his caravan near the truck when they stored the rabbits and not in the homestead. Robert finished that tour and never returned. He further moved south and took up a different line of work. He rarely speaks of the experience, but since learning about other paranormal events in the news, he feels there are similarities between many of these reports. You're probably seeing some of these parallels already. Strange displays in the sky are followed by non-physical presences and unusual animals that appear and disappear without a trace. The comparison to Skinwalker Ranch is almost unavoidable, and Robert has noted the same comparison. Other people were speaking, that they've spoken to, have told similar stories. Australian paranormal researcher Cade Moyer describes the Hills End area to the south of Quinyambi Station as insanely active. Visitors to the region continue to report sightings of the Min Min lights and anomalous objects in the skies to this day. The cattle station may not be precisely the same as Skinwalker, but it doesn't seem to be far off. So there you go.
It's a really cool story, and I wonder where it is in correlation, like Skinwalker Ranch to them, because Skinwalker Ranch talks about those portals opening up and things walking out of those portals.
Yeah.
Well, every door has an enter and exit. Maybe they're the other end of that portal. That's where that kangaroo could have came from, you know?
Yeah.
That's just one theory, you know? You're going to have to send me the name of that ranch. I'm more curious about that. That's really cool. Yeah. It sounds like they do have a lot of similarities with Skinwalker Ranch.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. Three more stories today on Supernatural News. David Bowie was convinced that the ghost of his father was phoning him. Interestingly enough, the music legend who himself passed away in 2016 had previously recalled his own potentially paranormal experience. Throughout his incredible life, Bowie was certainly no stranger to out there themes, having based his most famous stage persona, Ziggy Stardust, on the concept of an alien rock star who comes to Earth with a message of hope. Back in 1969, however, Bowie had an experience that led him to believe that his late father, Haywood Jones, was attempting to contact him from beyond the grave. The story goes that in the days following the death of Jones, Bowie's telephone would mysteriously ring at the same time every day for a whole week.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. According to drummer John Cambridge, who knew Bowie, the phenomenon had started, I didn't hit the button this time, had started after he moved into a country house in Derbyshire. He said nobody ever answered when he said hello, and he was convinced that it was his dad letting him know that everything was okay, that according to Cambridge. He added that the house itself was an old atmospheric and spooky place at the best of times. While he had never directly experienced anything unexplained there, he'd heard from others who had. No explanation for the mysterious phone calls was ever found.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
That is really cool to hear that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love when you hear about artists having paranormal experiences, like whether it be recording in a haunted location or something like this. Like it just humanizes them even more.
Yes, absolutely. And now I have the obituary of one I hope you have a paranormal experience with.
Sounds good. I wouldn't mind having a paranormal experience with David Bowie. He's one of my favorite artists. My wife and I have a small David Bowie collection, and I hope he calls me sometime.
Well, I am hoping.
You're hoping for this one, huh?
I am hoping that Cynthia L. Britton visits you one day.
Okay, who is Cynthia Albert?
And put you in her famous collection.
And what's her famous collection?
From Beyond the Grave.
Is she the woman that would take rock stars' manly areas and make casts of them?
Ding, 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 ding.
I don't know how I know that. I don't know how I know that.
You knew it just off her name. That is impressive, my friend.
I don't know how I know that.
Cynthia Plaster Caster, artist famed for plaster casting musicians' phalluses, died at the age of 74. God love her and God rest your soul, Cynthia.
Well, I wonder what happened to her collection. Someone's inheriting that.
Well, we'll go into that in the story.
All right.
Cynthia L. Britton cast the erect penises of rockers like Jimi Hendrix, the Buzzcocks, Pete Shelley, that's ironic, and Dead Kennedys frontman Jello Biafra. Cynthia Plastercaster, the artist known for casting the erect phalluses of famous rock musicians like Jimmy, Pete Shelley, Jello Biafra, has passed away, unfortunately. Her representatives confirmed that she died in Chicago on April 21st, rather, following a long illness. She was 74. Cynthia Plastercaster was born Cynthia Albritton in Chicago in 1947. She attended art school in the 1960s, and she was given an assignment to create a plaster cast of something solid that could retain its shape.
Well, she got the right thing.
That's right. While others might reach for a seashell or toothbrush, Albritton, who would later describe herself as a recovering groupie, found her muse in the frontmen of her favorite rock bands, specifically they're dongers. Albritton's first famous subject belonged to Jimi Hendrix. She started off the bar high.
Yeah, she went real high, quick.
Jimi Hendrix. If you're going to pick one, that's it right there. Who agreed to be cast in 1968 while on tour in Chicago.
I would love to be a fly on the wall while that conversation is going on.
Right.
Like, hey, I got this college project.
Yeah, you know? I'm going to do this for a college project. Would you agree? And Jimmy's like, let me think, baby. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead and take this thing in your hand and make some plastic cast out of it.
You have to stay erect for a long time, too, because plaster takes a while pun intended, to harden, right?
There's the challenge, and that comes up here as well. The following year, Albritton cast two members of the MC5, Wayne Kramer and drummer Dennis Thompson. Unfortunately, Kramer's plaster mixture was botched.
Oh, Ouch.
It was set before he could push his all the way into the mold, only getting the head in.
Okay.
Yeah. All Britain told the Chicago Reader in 2002, the sculpture wound up as a result a bit on the short side. Wayne quite literally got the shaft, according to All Britain. All Britain's work eventually got grabbed the attention of Frank Zappa, who never subjected himself to casting, but who became a sort of patron of the arts. Zappa moved All Britain out to Los Angeles, and after her apartment was broken into in 1971, Zappa and All Britain entrusted over 24 casts to Zappa's legal partner, Herb Cohen, for safekeeping. Cohen held on to the pieces much longer than All Britain intended. However, it took several years and a court appearance for her to get all but three of them back.
I wonder what three he kept. Like, these are pretty sentimental to me.
Yeah,
Mick Jagger does not come back to you. Sorry. Stones fan.
This one speaks to me. In 2000, Al Britton held her first plaster cast exhibition in New York. In 2000, she would go on exhibit to exhibit her work at MOMA PS1 in Queens. Several years later, in addition to casting roughly 50 famous phalluses, All Britain also made plaster replicas of breasts. You know, when in Rome.
Okay.
You know. Yeah. You know, you got to treat it equally. You got to make ones of the ladies as well. Her collection included pairs from Stereo Labs' Letitia Sadier, I believe it is, Sally Timms of the Macons, Peaches, and Karen O. Al Britton has been immortalized in songs like Kiss's Plaster Caster, the song that my parents wouldn't allow me to listen to, while a 2001 documentary of the same name chronicled her artistic legacy. In 2010, Al Britton ran for mayor of Chicago on the hard party ticket. So, yes, she was a politician at one time.
Oh, in the hard party.
Yeah, she was on in the hard party. Yeah, yeah.
Just her sitting in a room with all of her dongs around her.
I guess. Yeah. Well, don't forget the breasts. The breasts were there too.
That's true. Yes.
In 2018, in an interview, Al Britton discussed the process of making her sweet babies, as she called them, as she often referred to her casts. Once they've submerged in that mold, they're kind of numb. I feel for them, and I'm hopeful that they come out looking their prettiest, she told Lucretia Ty Jasmine. Al Britton also spoke about the enhanced vulnerability that accompanied her work. Their human flaws make them kind of attractive, she said of her rock star subjects. I was shocked and delighted to find that they were as insecure as I was. That kind of made me see them in a different light. They're the same as us. So Godspeed, God love you, Cynthia Al Britton, Miss Cynthia Plaster Caster, as you go on to the great divine, and hopefully you can get St. Peter's Peter in a plaster caster.
I can see her at the pearly gates. Before you let me in, can I interest you in a plaster cast?
I got one last project I gotta do here. I just thought that story was very unique. I mean,
it is.
You know, it's an obituary. It's not really, you know. And one last story here, Bruiser. It's a little cryptozoological. It's a little, I don't know if it's necessarily paranormal, but it's the cutest thing ever.
Okay. Cute cryptozoological is amazing. I love little cute cryptozoological animals and beings.
A Florida zoo has welcomed a baby spider monkey with Batman markings.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
He's the cutest little spider monkey ever. The Brevard Zoo says 31-year-old mother Shelley gave birth to a baby in the early morning hours of April 15th, and the baby is now doing well in the exhibit with the rest of the troop, including Father Monkey Shooter, who's 25. You named a spider monkey Shooter. Evidently, he must have good genes. Zookeepers do not know yet the sex of the baby, but they noted the primate has unusual facial markings. Keepers were surprised to see the baby's unique markings, noting the resemblance to the Batman symbol, the zoo said in the birth announcement. The zoo...
Well, hopefully if it's a boy, they name him Bruce, and if it's a girl, they name him Barbara.
True. Or just... Batman.
Or vengeance.
Say, where's my bottle? The zoo said the baby is currently on display with the rest of the spider monkey troop at the facility's Rainforest Revealed exhibit. So there's a little spider monkey soon to be named Christian Bale. I never liked the sparkly vampire taking my role. Yeah.
They could play homage and name it Adam.
They could. They could name him Adam West or just West. Yeah. They could do lots of things for that little baby spider monkey. Name him after something. They'd call him Gotham.
Yeah.
Yeah.
DC better incorporate him somehow in the Batman universe now. Like, this is a sign from God that, hey, this monkey needs to be in comics.
Wasn't there a bat monkey or wasn't there I think
there's a little bat.
Well, Batmite. There was Batmite.
There's Batmite, yeah. Yeah. And then there's a bat dog, which is in the Justice League Pets.
I could have sworn in the 50s there was a bat monkey, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong.
I don't remember a bat monkey. I remember Batmite is the closest I think you're going to get. But no, yeah. No. Yes, there was. No, that was Wonder Twins.
Well, they had Gleek. There was Zan, Jaina, yeah. And Gleek, and he was a monkey. He was my favorite. I love Gleek.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love Gleek. You know what? By gosh, I'm going to Google it. I got to stop the show before the end and find out if there was a bat monkey, because now we have an official.
I like how we both right away went to look this up. You can't tell we're comic book fans.
No, not at all. But yeah, speaking of, by the way, we may be doing just a short comic book segment. I know some people are like, nah. We may be doing a short comic book segment with the guys from Granite City Comics on a weekly basis just to talk about some supernatural, because, you know, horror and supernatural comics are on the rise right now.
Oh, yeah. Walking Dead put a shot in the arm, and Fangora, I know, has just gotten a big boost.
Well, it's not only that, but there's DC lately has been doing a lot of comics based on the old slasher movies and things like that. So there's going to be some really interesting comics out there, and there are really interesting comics right now that are based on, and we're not talking the Vault of Horror or any of the old EC comics. We're
Tales
talking
from the Crypt or
anything like that. We're talking some interesting long form stories and month to month stories that are out there. And I've detailed a couple of those comics here on the show that make it made into movies because they're that intriguing.
I wonder if that's because of the success of DC Dark. And it's Bat Ape is who you're thinking of.
Bat Ape?
Bat Ape, using the Brave and the Bold.
Yes, that's what it was. That's what it was. So we'll probably have Jay on from, just to do a quick 5-minute deal. We'll talk about the three hottest comics that are on this week, or the three hottest comics being released this week, and then we'll talk about the supernatural or the paranormal comic of the week, because you've had the Warrens being featured in comic form. There's a Conjuring comic book out there. There's a lot of good stuff out there that I think our paranormal and supernatural audience is totally missing out on. In the world,
TV show Supernatural has a line of comics.
Yeah, there's a lot out there that.
And then, if anybody's ever curious about comics and you want to get into it but not dive as deep as you can, the Hellraiser or Constantine comics cover the occult and everything supernatural. It's an amazing book.
Yeah, there's so much out there right now that I think our audience is missing out on. So we'll just do a quick recap every week on supernatural news of what there is out there that you can, if you're interested in even just taking a peek. You don't necessarily have to buy the comics. It's just something that JL will recap for us real quick in the week. And, you know, because we used to have Aaron Sagers on, and he would kind of give us the geek culture side of things. But I think Jay can come on and kind of give us that little segment of what we can find on the shelves.
That's exciting. I love, I can talk comics all day. I can talk, you know me, I can talk all this all day.
Yeah. So just a little extra something from your boys here on Darkness Radio to get you through the week. So there you go. So that'll do it for this week. Bruiser, where are you going to be around the area or even around the country?
May 13th, I'm in Green Bay. May 14th, I'm in Rockford. Then the following week I'm in Kansas.
Really?
And Kansas and Nebraska. I'm doing a little loop there.
Okay.
And then the end of May is the big moving day.
Oh yeah, so that's right.
moving, getting it all in, and as of June 1st, I'll be a North Carolina resident.
There you go. Well, God love you.
yeah, I know. We were talking about that earlier, about how it's 30 degrees up by you, 30 degrees here in Wisconsin. I looked at my I have the Ring doorbell, and it tells the temperature and or the app and all that, and it says it's 70 degrees. It's like, oh.
And I told you, I'm still going to be snow blowing in July. I'm gonna
yes,
be snow,
you are.
I'm going to be snow blowing out a spot to watch fireworks on July 4th.
I am so happy to have mild winters. Like, you have no idea.
Well, I'm going to probably have to buy you a Cracker Barrel rocking chair for a housewarming gift.
Please do. We want some for the backyard. And I'm just excited to be in a new area with new history that I don't know about. And all the tobacco plantations and stuff out there. I'm going to do a lot of research into those, see if I can investigate some of the haunted ones out there. And a lot of the Civil War battle stuff. And
yeah,
I'm pumped to do that this summer and just grab my gear and walk around and
yeah,
see what I can learn, you know,
lots of new adventures over there in your new neighborhood. That's for sure.
Biltmore's an hour and a half from me.
Oh, so, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm real excited for that.
There's lots of good stuff going on down in that area. That's for sure. As far as the paranormal community goes. And I know that much. And
I've actually had a paranormal group reach out to me already.
Really?
Yep. I don't have it off the top of my head, and I apologize because they are listeners of the show, but I'm very excited to partner up with them and learn. Like, I'm also a history buff, so I love history, and the Civil War is one of my favorite time periods. So to hear all that stuff, and they've already reached out to me, and I've already been communicating with them. So
nice.
Yeah, I got the underwater needlepoint bookings, and now I'm starting to get the paranormal bookings. Your boy is happy.
I guess. Now you're going to have to start showing up at paranormal conventions.
I would love to do that. Paranormal conventions, Comic-Cons, I'm there. Let's do it.
There you go. There you go. So Bruiser's available for paranormal conventions. And the easiest way to get a hold of him is on his Twitter.
Yep, at BCB Winchester. Just shoot me a message on there, and I try to respond to everybody as I can.
There you go. And we'll have that link up here in the description of this program. And speaking of links, one more time, the UFO Disclosure Symposium. A lot of the stories you heard today, there's even some experts that were in those stories that will be at the UFO Disclosure Symposium. Costs nothing to look, folks. Click on the link. And Darkness Radio is proud to be pairing up with the UFO Disclosure Symposium. By all means, there's a VIP package there that gets you dinner with the speakers and gets you some exclusive events. There's a general admission package. Or if you have no plans to go to Vernal, Utah, May 27th through the 29th and just want to watch it from home, you could do so. You could just click on that link and get yourself a streaming package from anywhere in the world. And it's the least expensive package in the bit.
So and you can watch it anytime too, right?
Yep.
Or you can just live stream. Yep.
You can log in and out, and anywhere throughout the weekend, you can tune into that conference and see what you want to see. And you can do it all from the comfort of your home, which is nice because a lot of conferences don't do that. And you will see some top secret stuff that has not been released to the world anywhere in the world. It's going to be a newsworthy and news-breaking conference out there in Vernal, Utah. That's going to do it for this week. Tomorrow on the program, Jim Harold, our old friend Jim Harold, will be with us. We're going to do some more campfire stories here and try to scare the pants off you right here on the best in paranormal podcasting. For Beer City Bruiser, I'm Tim Dennis. Thank you very much for listening to another edition of Darkness Radio.